from the Star Rental Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports
Headlines. All righty, here we go. 502 on a Friday night. Headlines on Softy and Dick are brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
More than anything, I want better execution. Are we clear on that? I want better execution.
The AP All-Pro team announced today. Bobby Wagner out of Utah State for the sixth time, fifth year in a row, first team All-Pro linebacker. DK Metcalf, Jamal Adams named to the second team, your first team quarterback Aaron Rodgers, and how about Buda Baker, Bellevue High, UW, Arizona Cardinals, first team safety, all pro for the second time in his career. First year he was named as a special team player, but Buda Baker now an all pro with safety for Arizona.
Rams news, they've activated Michael Brockers off the COVID list. Titans wide receiver A.J. Brown did not practice today, but he says he will play against the Ravens, quote, if he has any breath left in his body.
So unless he's dead.
Unless he's
gonna,
dead, he says he's going to play.
There will not be a corpse playing for the Ravens. Okay, right. UW basketball. They're on the struggle bus, baby. You ever jump on the struggle bus on the golf course, by the way?
Oh,
1-8. 1-8 after a 91-75 loss to Stanford yesterday. Huskies at Cal tomorrow. 12 o'clock tip. 11:30 pregame right here on KJR.
Testing on the Browns showed no new positives. The game against the Steelers is on for Sunday night, and Colts defensive coordinator Matt Eberflus has turned down an interview offer from the Houston Texans. How bad is it in Houston?
Well, you know what? If Watson's not going to be there, why would you want to go? Andy Avalos, Oregon defensive coordinator, 39 years old, former Boise State linebacker, reported to be leaving Oregon to become the new head coach at Boise State University. All right. 5:45 tonight.
Stats are for losers.
And
he's saying it was DPI.
Before Chris Daniels jumps on the air, Chris has some news regarding the future of Sonic basketball in Seattle.
We'll talk
to Chris. I do say. I say very much so.
You don't say.
I do. It's 6 p.m. tonight on the program. Joining us right now on the air, only one guy we go to for a take on tomorrow's game as he smacks his microphone around. That's how fired up he is to come on the show. He can't even control himself. Hugh Miller is with us. How are you, man? What's going on?
Good. Yeah. I'm just taking out my aggression on this little tool right here. I tell you what.
I
hope the Seahawks are ready to go that.
I get it. Everybody's all fired up for tomorrow. You know, let's just start there. Before we talk about DK Metcalf and Jalen Ramsey and John Wolford and Jared Goff and Russell Wilson, a weird year where nobody can rally together. We're not going to games. We're not going to bars. We're not hanging out with each other, rubbing elbows, wearing our Seahawk jerseys to work, you know, the whole spiel. Has the lack of the fan interaction changed your enthusiasm level for the postseason at all?
Yeah, I think it'd be a little bit higher, but you know, it is what it is. On the list of things that the COVID has impacted, our enthusiasm level for playoff football is relatively low, right?
I mean,
obviously we all know we have to focus on the blessings that we have, I guess we can be grateful that the NFL, I think, has been very successful in terms of pulling off this season, far more than I might have thought, and certainly far more than college football as a greater entity. So, you go into these playoff games and you just assume that most, if not all, of the significant players are going to be available for the games, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, and we're seeing that. I mean, the Seahawks are very, very healthy, Hugh. And, you know, there's been a lot of chirping, and some would call what Jalen Ramsey said inflammatory. Others would just say, no, he's complimenting DK Metcalf. But you watched both games numerous times. Tell us about Jalen against DK game one versus the changes you saw in game two.
Well, first of all, as a general response to what Jalen Ramsey's been saying, first of all, I think he's a great player. I'm sure he's deserving of the first team all pro. I haven't studied all of his games, but he's a great, great player, and any team would love to have him. But it reminds me, I got drafted to the Rams, they were in Anaheim. And that's when the Raiders were also in L.A. And you had in L.A., you had the Raiders had Mike Haynes, 9-time Pro Bowler, and you had Lester Hayes, a 5-time Pro Bowler. Mike Haynes is in the Hall of Fame. Lester Hayes, a lot of people think, should be in the Hall of Fame. And then down in the Rams, down in Orange County, we had Jerry Gray, a 4-time Pro Bowler corner. And we had Leroy Irvin, who was a 3-time Pro Bowl corner, but he was one time he was first team all NFL, right? So what would happen is all the Raiders guys, they would say, oh, those wussies down south, they wear those powder blue uniforms and they play that soft ass zone defense. because the Raiders were saying, no, we play cover one man-to-man. Mike Haynes, Lester Hayes say, we play man-to-man, and down in Anaheim, they're playing cover three zone, which, by the way, that's the defense that Seattle won the Super Bowl with, right? Mm-hmm. That cover. It's a three deep four in their zone. Most of the time, the receivers are locked in man to man, but not at all times, because if they go shallow cross or what have you, then they don't follow them. The point being is, when you look at the Rams now, and I'm just imagining how Lester Hayes and Mike Haynes would reply to this, because I took all of the coverages. And I ranked them most difficult to easiest, okay? And I think any football coach, if they're listening, would nod and agree with me. Number one, you start with cover zero. That is man-to-man with no free safety. Teams hardly ever do that. In fact, the Chiefs, who are number one in the NFL, they only go cover zero 9% of the times, okay? And then followed by the Dolphins, Ravens, and Bucks. But the Rams only go cover zero 1.3% of the time. That's in a clump down at the bottom of the league. The next most difficult would be cover one. That's man-to-man with one free safety to help you on the post. The Rams are 28% of the time. That's ranks 27th in the league. Okay? Cover three. I'm going in order of most difficult to least difficult to play the cornerback position. The current Rams are 24%. It's about middle of the pack. Then you get into, there's a clear line where you get into the split safety defenses, where cover four, cover two, another thing called cover six. I don't want to get into all that, cover two man, whatever. The Rams are number one in the NFL, the highest ranked of cover four. That means Jalen Ramsey, he doesn't have to guard dig routes or skinny posts, because he's got a safety sitting right in that area.
Wow.
He can guard with greater aggression the outbreaking routes. Okay, and the last would be cover two. Think of like Charles Tillman, remember him from the Bears?
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you're a cover two corner, I mean, we could get Ben Burkervin. He could fill in. He could go an entire game being a cover two corner. And they play cover two. I'm sitting there studying the tape of 2 weeks ago, looking at Jalen Ramsey playing cloud coverage. That's the zone near the flat, and a safety over the top. So what I'm trying to tell you is Lester Hayes and Mike Haynes would laugh Jalen Ramsey right out of this discussion.
Wow.
So I would just say, Jalen Ramsey, just shut your pie hole and be a great corner, which is what you are. And then the other notion that, like, somehow the Seahawks are playing scared. It reminds me, Google this. I saw a couple of years ago, there was a baseball player, and he got into a feud with a pitcher. And he would come up to, this is Major League Baseball. Yeah. Guy comes up to the on deck box, and he's yelling at the pitcher, hey, throw me a fastball. What are you, chicken? Throw me a fastball. And the pitcher's standing on the mound going, why the hell, what part of the rules of baseball obligate me to have to throw you a fastball?
Right.
Because I can strike your sorry ass out with junk every time, right? It's so like, why would the Seahawks feel compelled? Are they obligated to just line up him outside?
Right.
And by the way, they might, if you line up DK Metcalf outside, the safety might go over the top.
Well, let me ask you this, because I totally agree with you. The idea of a wide receiver shadowing a corner, there's something backwards about that, obviously. But, and this will light your fire, I know this, that you go back to the two games the Hawks have played against the Rams, DK Metcalf has 12 total targets in the two games the Hawks played against the Rams. Was that because of something the Rams were doing, or was that just an unwillingness on Schottenheimer, Russell Wilson's part to force feed DK Metcalf?
Combination. I think Russell's he has rethought his idea of what constitutes open. You look at the very best quarterbacks in this league, the Drew Brees, the Aaron Rodgers, what have you. They throw guys open. They're covered, but they'll just put the ball in a spot where only their guy can get it. I think Russell has. I mean, I was just looking a few minutes ago at this what's called a chair route. It's a out, up, and stop that you had Tyler Lockett ran a great route. Mm-hmm. He's open for a 20-yard gain, and Russell's turned the play down, and he's going to the check down right away. Mm. So I think his aggression level, and that's, I just gave you one example to highlight a specific, but I could translate in a general statement. I don't think he's as aggressive as he has been, but Seattle can drop DK Metcalf inside. They can shift the formation to get whatever coverage they want. That's what the offense can do. Because guess what? If you watch the Patriot game, Stephon Gilmore was shattering DK even when he was in the slot. It was like, Dick, you coach high school basketball, like the box in one. Mm-hmm. They were playing a box car in one, which is like in a dice, three deep, three under. If you look at a six, which is box cars, right? Three deep, three under zone, and shadow DK wherever he goes. You could do that if you want. I mean, it's there. The defense can move all they want, line up against whoever they want. They can cover however they want. Yeah. So just Seattle play their game, and you take advantage of personnel and formations to get the team moving in the end zone. That's all Seattle has to think about.
Let's come back next segment and talk about the quarterback situation for the Rams. More on Russell Wilson, more on the Rams defense. Bobby Wagner, first team all pro for the sixth time ever. I believe only four linebackers have been named all pro more times than Bobby Wagner has, Hugh. So lots of conversation about the Hawks and Rams tomorrow. Hugh Millen on Softy and Dick, more with him.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your home for the NFL playoffs and Super Bowl 55. Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
All right, Hugh Millen with us on the radio show for the next segment.
You guys had what, Milner?
Hugh, I want to ask you something real quick before we get back into the Rams-Seahawks conversation. I'm going to have a broader look. You mentioned about the NFL, impressive what they've done to pull this off. And you know, Dick and I have talked about that, I mean, they really have kind of spit in the face of the pandemic. Not only have they kept going and not had one game canceled, but now they're about to play more playoff games than ever in the history of the NFL. And I remember you saying over the offseason you were concerned about not really what happens Wednesday through Sunday, but more what happens when the players go home and they take Tuesday off. So how surprised are you that we're sitting here, you know, 4 or 5 months into this when you include training camp and they didn't get one game canceled, not one?
Well, you could say that Broncos Saint game was like a semi-cancel, but you're absolutely right.
Yep.
So I would say, particularly if you had told me how many canceled college games there would be,
right?
Armed with that knowledge and foresight, I would have said, oh boy, well if college football canceled, I think it was in triple digits, right? Didn't they have over 100 college games canceled? I mean, it depends on what levels you want to add. Then I would have said, yeah, there's got to be a dozen or so either canceled or postponed. And so yes, I'm surprised they've been able to execute it as well as they have.
Hugh, what'd you see from John Wolford last week, and what type of threat does he pose if he plays?
Well, the first thing he saw, his very first pass was a pick six, and it was just
it was a basic
undisguised three deep. We were talking about three deep cover three last segment. It was just a three deep zone. And I always tell quarterbacks when you coach quarterback, it's not the trailing defender in zone coverage that's going to get you because your eyes get him. It's the converging defender. It's the defender out in front. And you got to be wary of that guy. And so it was just kind of a simple, basic mistake he made. But it didn't deter him. He ran with, I think the first quarter he had runs of 13 and 11 yards on scrambles. Another 9-yard run, I think, was on a designed. So they were running the read zone. He was keeping it in the alley on that area right outside the offensive tackle. So he's certainly more mobile. He made some plays down the field. He looked confident. You know, he's thick in stature. He hangs in the pocket well for a guy his size. And he made a lot of good throws. But, you know, to the idea of Jared Goff's put it this way. If they're truly saying that they might bench Jared Goff,
yes,
then why is Jared Goff the seventh highest quarterback in salary in the entire league and in the top 10 in all positions in the league?
Well, because they made a mistake.
Just get a guy off the streets.
Right, they screwed up. J.B. Long, I'm not sure if you caught it, he's the voice of the Rams. He was on with us at 3:20. He's saying that could be a factor, that Jared Goff could be cleared to go, but they might start Wolford anyway.
Well, and is that because they think that Goff is not entirely 100% with his thumb? And what that could mean is first of all, there's physical limitations, right? I mean, how he's gripping the football and how he's throwing, whether he can be under center. The Rams are number one in the NFL in terms of under center, which means the reciprocal of that is they're dead last in terms of being in shotgun.
Right.
And the Rams are number one in terms of their propensity to throw the football when they are in shotgun. So on all shotgun plays, the Rams basically tell you they're at like 93%. They basically tell you when we go in shotgun, we're throwing it.
Right.
And so if Goff can't take the snap due to a tender thumb, they might have to change what they do and run the ball more out of shotgun, which is, again, something right. they don't do.
Yeah, he made it sound like, and Dick, correct me if I'm wrong, but he made it sound like even if Goff is cleared to go and can grip and throw the ball, that they may go with Wolford anyway. Just as
absolutely.
A, as
that's what I heard, Hugh.
Performance
that,
issue.
It was performance, not injury.
I don't believe that Goff is true. If Goff doesn't play tomorrow, he is materially inhibited, either psychologically worried about hitting his thumb, or he can't handle the ball, or again the center exchange. I don't believe that Goff is 100%, and that they are going to replace Goff with a guy who's started one game. I don't believe that.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think it's crazy. I mean, Dick and I are both agreement on that. I mean, if he can play, if he can grip a ball and it doesn't inhibit his throwing motion or his ability to get the ball downfield, maybe he's going to be in pain. Maybe they have to readjust, as you said, their formations a little bit there. But if he can play, I mean, dude, the guy was in the damn Super Bowl 2 years ago, for God's sakes. There's a reason why they gave him the money they gave him. So I'm in agreement with you. And as a Seahawk fan, I would love to see John Wolford play.
Absolutely.
And when they went to the Super Bowl, he threw for 297 yards in the dome, and in that particular year, as we know, had a lot of crowd noise that's a hostile environment. Can you imagine? There's not much more difficult places to play than the NFC Championship game in the dome. Now you have benign throwing conditions, but the crowd, the communication is relentless in that building.
Do you play defense differently if John Wolford's on the field? And if so, if the answer is yes, how?
Well, you got to be wary of the read zone and be ready that if you know your read zone rules, if the defensive end collapses, let's say Carlos Dunlap is unblocked because the tackle climbs to the second level on him. If he's going to run down the line to get the running back, then you better have a straight scrape exchange responsibility where the linebacker is going to scrape out to that outside alley, because the quarterback will keep it if Carlos Dunlap collapses inside. So you have to be sound in terms of your concepts there. In terms of your contain responsibilities, particularly for a right-handed quarterback, if you're rushing from the left end, you can't take the B gap on the inside of the tackle and allow a right-handed quarterback to get out on the edge, because he's got the speed. He can run for 9 or 11 yards and pick up a first down. In man-to-man, you can play man-to-man. We talked about cover one. That's one free safety man-to-man. You can do that. Simple math. You can do it with either four rushers or five. A lot of teams go with five-man rush because obviously you're getting an extra rusher. But in so doing, you have nobody assigned for the quarterback.
Yeah.
Against athletic quarterbacks, you better rush four and then keep a guy like Bobby Wagner as a spy slash.
Yes.
And I mean it, spy slash robber defender or lurk defender to help on shallow crosses. And in the event that you have a scrambling quarterback, then Bobby's in a position to do that. He did that with Colin Kaepernick. He's been doing that great his whole career.
Yeah, that's customarily something that you would see them customarily do for sure.
Yes, sir.
What about Jamal Adams and the shoulder? How problematic is that for you for tomorrow?
Well, I'm concerned in the following regard. When you go back to when he got hurt at the Rams, mm-hmm. not the most recent one, but at LA about 7-8 weeks ago.
Right.
He gets pinned by the tight end on the third play of the game. He loses contain and he hurts his shoulder. From that point on the one hand, you could say it was valiant for him to be competitive enough. No, coach, I'm staying in the game. But watch the tape. He was backing off of all contact. He had the noted one where it was down by the goal line. He turned down the opportunity to make a hit, which could have caused a fumble, and he just went ole and let a guy go in. I mean, he literally was playing with one arm. In the post-game show, he admitted that he was playing with one arm, and he was hurting the football team. In fact, in that game, Pro Football Focus had him down for a season low. His run defense grade was 40.0. If you line that up against all safeties for a season, if he played that way every game, mm-hmm. his run grade of 40.0 would be 157th ranked safety in the league in that department.
Yeah.
Okay? And so I would just say this. We've already seen it. You watch the tape. He's backing off of contact. Just go watch the tape of the first Ram game. So if he's out there, Seattle, and this falls on Pete Carroll, they've got to do a better job of monitoring. Because, again, credit the player. He wants to stay in the game, but he's going to stay in no matter what. It's his first playoff game of his life. But if he's not mixing it up and doing what he does best – which in my mind is being like a Cam Chancellor type box safety and being active, a free flowing, you know, instinctive type of guy. It, essentially, his best attributes somewhat mirror what a linebacker does.
Yeah.
And so he's got to be that guy. He can't be playing with one arm like he did 6 weeks ago.
So does he belong on the All-Pro list as a second teamer?
Well, I knew it was going to happen. I've been talking to you just because he set this the sack record and they spent two number ones on him. I do not believe so. I think he's a very good football player, but he's somewhat limited. And by the way, just to back me up here, we're talking about Pro Football Focus, the only people that endeavor to grade every player on every play, and it's owned by Chris Collinsworth, and a lot of NFL teams subscribe to it. Just to give you an example, if you take all linebackers in the NFL who qualify by snaps, that's 320 snaps, 16 times 20. You get 20 snaps a game you have to average to qualify. Bobby Wagner is the second-ranked linebacker in the NFL behind only Fred Warner, who everybody has been lauding has had an unbelievable year. KJ Wright, you think he had a pretty good season?
Yeah.
They rank him as the seventh linebacker in the entire NFL. They rank Jamal Adams 59th safety. And in coverage, he was in the triple digits. I think last time I saw maybe 112 or something. So I figured, just knowing how these votes go, I knew he was going to be all pro or certainly make the Pro Bowl, and now he's second team all pro because of the sack record. But six of his sacks, he was unblocked because of how Seattle set the table for him schematically. So I think he's a really, really good player, but I do not think he played. And by the way, there's been two seasons with the Jets where Jamal Adams has been in the top five in Pro Football Focus. But again, for this year, 59th.
Yeah.
No, I don't think he's first team All-Pro. I don't think he's second team All-Pro.
Well, speaking of PFF, they've got Russell Wilson ranked as the 18th best quarterback since week 9 of the NFL season. Matt Calkins wrote a piece for the paper, says he's been mediocre in the last 5 weeks. Looked up the numbers. Last 5 weeks, 16th in passer rating. That is the definition of mediocre in the National Football League. 20th in percentage, 21st in yards, 27th in yards per attempt. They're going to make a deep run, Hugh. Number 3's got to play better.
Yeah, he does, and that's after week 1 through 8 where he was number one in all of their metrics, right? So, look, the big play is dried up. We know. We've seen it, right? And so that's a combination of factors. I think there was a period there where Russ in the middle part of the season was turning the ball over, and I think Pierre Carroll finally said, enough of this. I heard this let Russ cook stuff, and I gave you your shot, and now we got to go back to playing Seahawks football. And so I think the pendulum has swung back with Russ, where unless it's bright green, you know, it's like sometimes when I watch a tape, I'm like, Russ, the light ain't going to get any greener in the NFL. This is the NFL. And sometimes he's just reluctant to pull the trigger. That's not the only aspect. There's several aspects. Another one is that the route concepts that Seattle has been employing, teams are starting to anticipate that because they run them out of similar formations. And they're jumping plays. And so Russ, you know, you see him sometimes he'll start to pull the ball back and then he'll think better of it. You know, in those zone coverages that he's seeing zone defenders that are anticipating Seattle's route concepts.
Yeah.
So I think that some of this is on Schottenheimer.
Mm.
Mm. Right. And so I think that just the combination of the philosophy, the mentality, and Russ's idea of, are we going to take some shots down the field? You take some shots down the field, like Troy Aikman says, we should throw to DK Metcalf once per quarter, period, deep down the field.
Yeah.
Because even if you don't hit him, of course, you might get a pass interference. But the next time you do an intermediate route, you're far more likely to get separation. So I think they've got to be more bold in some areas and more creative in some areas.
Well, the numbers will back you up. Russ throws only 11% of his passes into a tight window defined as 1 yard or less open. He is the least aggressive quarterback in the league. But what's interesting, Hugh, Rodgers is second and Mahomes is third. Yeah, but Rodgers is second and Mahomes is third. So I guess the best quarterbacks in the league are like, I'm just not going to fire it in there in the drawing board.
That's interesting. Yeah, and who are the guys that are, that's interesting. Well, I just go by the tape. You know, I don't know how they assign that. And but a lot of times, a lot of times people, you know, scoff at run after the catch. They say, well, wait a minute. And nowadays people are quantifying that. What's your standard air yards and then run after the catch? That's readily available. But if you're quarterbacking well, you use your eyes, and that's part of your thought process. If I'm going to throw the swing route and I'm going to get 9 yards, 9 yards per attempt is really damn good, right? And if the defense is giving me that swing route and now I get probably 11 yards because it's caught 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage, in certain circumstances, that's the right throw because it's the only throw. Now, there's other times where you could say, wait a minute, the quarterback, he's getting to his check down and he's not even going through his progression. Like, he's turning down intermediate cuts and maybe even deep cuts. And, you know, the term is check down Charlie, right? Some, you know, like a guy who's way too cautious. Well, if you check down Charlie too much in playoff football, it's the perfect way to score 16 points.
Yeah, yeah. Well, give us, before you go, we got about a minute and a half left here, Hugh. Anything else on your mind for tomorrow for the Seahawks to win this game and get to the second round? What has to happen for the Hawks tomorrow? What
do you want to do? I think they've got to play the Rams the way they did in 2 weeks ago, because they were phenomenal defending the bootleg. I think there was 11 attempts by the Rams on the bootleg, and those can be really big time. And they averaged exactly 3.1 yards per attempt. So I think they had a great game plan. Expect some adjustments. So Ken Norton's going to have to adjust. But the game plan could not have been any better 2 weeks ago. And then offensively, I'm dying to see Chris Carson run between the tackles. I thought last week he chose to bounce the ball and go outside. And I understand sometimes you're going to call the stretch play to set up your play action and your bootleg. I'm not saying you're not going to run the stretch play.
Right.
I'm just saying that there's times where the stretch play, you should go north and get up inside the B gap between the guard and the tackle, or the A gap between the center and the guard, because that's the way the play is designed. And on, certainly on inside runs, if Carson's going to elect to bounce it, he's got to make sure he better be right, because if he goes and bounces it, he weighs 100 pounds as he's running along the line of scrimmage, and he's an easy tackle. He's got to make sure there's grass if he goes out. So he's got to be ready to run inside the tackles with a lot of physicality.
Love it. Great stuff. Checks in the mail, right, pal. Look for it. Man. We'll see you tomorrow. Later. Hugh Millen with us on the air. Go Hawks. We're going to break. A little Stats Are for Losers.
Stats Are for Losers.
A little DPI.
He's saying it was DPI.
Coming next on Softy.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your home for the NFL playoffs and Super Bowl 55. Seattle Sports Radio 950. KJR.
Hey, we're going to deviate from the Hawks for a quick second. Chris Daniels, Channel 5, King 5 News, joining us next segment, and tell us exactly what is going on with expansion, the Sonics, the NBA, and there's some news to get to. So we'll do that next segment.
You don't say.
At 6 p.m., but right now.
He's saying it was DPI.
Time for the DPI. Never mind what the Vegas handicappers and the experts think. We got to find out what an 11-year-old kid thinks about the game tomorrow. So this kid better deliver. It's time, Dave. Come on. What do you
Hopefully it's not the last DPI of the football season, and we have a little special guest too well for this DPI. But I first asked Dixon, do you even know who John Wolford is?
No.
You don't know who John Wolford is? I don't think many people until about 6 days ago knew who John Wolford was. But does that make you more or less confident having a guy that has only played one game in the NFL starting for the Rams?
I think that makes me a little more confident. Like, even though that Jared Goff hurt his finger, I still think, like, with his, like, kind of experience, that he could do more.
I think you're probably right. The Rams probably have a better chance to win with Goff, so we may have to get separate DPIs this time. Let's get a DPI with Jared Goff as quarterback and a DPI with John Wolford as quarterback.
With Jared Goff as quarterback, I think it's going to be a 59% chance for the Seahawks.
Okay, and with Wolford?
I think it will be a 62% chance.
Okay, so a 3% chance difference. Now, we've added somebody to the DPI this week, your apprentice. Would you like to introduce your apprentice?
Aubrey.
Hello. Aubrey is here. Hi, Aubrey, because Dixon's going to graduate from the DPI here pretty soon, and we need somebody to take over. What do you think is going to happen in the Seahawks game?
I think the Seahawks are going to win, but, like,
by like a very little percentage.
You don't have to do the percentage. Like, you can do the score if you want. Like, who wins and by how much?
I think the Seahawks will win by 5 points.
5 point Seahawk win. So you like the Seahawks minus the 3.5, huh? Should I put some money down on that?
No.
No? You don't want me to put your college fund down on that?
No, definitely not.
Okay, say goodbye to Softy and go Seahawks.
Bye, Softy. Go Seahawks.
I love it. Well, look, if she says the win by 5, then they cover. I mean, come on, lady. Cover, what are you doing? ESPN, by the way, has it exactly what Dixon had, 59-41 on their football percentage index. So we got two kids that both think the Hawks will win, so that's pressure, baby. All right, time for Stats or for Losers.
It's time for
Stats or for Losers.
Stats for Losers.
Speaking of losers,
I'll source for once.
Take it away, Softy and Dick.
All right, let's get to it.
Stats are for losers.
So, you know I'm a big fan of cheering for fan bases that have paid their dues and waited their turn. Indians Cubs in the World Series a couple years ago was awesome. So how about this? The four longest droughts without a playoff win in the NFL. Current droughts in the NFL without a playoff win. Bengals' last playoff win, 1990. Lions' last playoff win was 91. The next two, Browns in 94 and the Bills in 95. Both of them could fall this weekend. That's followed by the Dolphins 20 years ago, the Buccaneers 18 years ago, Raiders 18 years ago, and Washington 15 years ago. That means four of the top eight longest active droughts in the NFL without a playoff victory. All of them could go down. One of them will go down because the Bucs and Washington play each other, by the way,
right,
this weekend. But two of the top four, number three and number four, are the Browns and Bills, 26 years and 25 years. They could both go down this weekend. How about that?
Stats are for losers.
And our guy Lee Sterling thinks neither one of them are going to go down. He thinks they're both going to lose. How about his pick of the Colts? How about that?
Well, I like the Colts and the points for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Deshaun Watson has been in the news.
All right.
And Deshaun Watson put up some impressive numbers this year. He had 4,500 passing yards, over 30 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 8.5 yards per completion. Those are some pretty darn good numbers. In fact,
pretty good.
He's only the fourth quarterback ever to have a season with those numbers. The other three, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, and Matt Ryan. Those three quarterbacks in those seasons when they had 4,500 or more, 30 or more, 10 or less interceptions and 8.5 yards per completion. They combined to have a 38-10 record in those seasons.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Deshaun Watson went 4-12. He had more losses than those three quarterbacks
now
combined.
Now you know.
Stats are for losers.
Now you know why Bill O'Brien got fired, because they shouldn't be as bad as they are.
All right.
Bobby Wagner.
Stats are for losers.
First team All-Pro today for the sixth time, 5 years in a row. You mentioned there were, what, 11 linebackers with six first team All-Pro appearances or more.
He's the 11th.
In the history of the NFL. How many linebackers.
Stats are for losers.
Do you think have had more than six first-team All-Pro appearances, meaning how many linebackers in the history of the NFL have been named first-team All-Pro more times than Bobby Wagner? Take a wild guess.
I'll say half of that, so five.
The answer is four. Ray Lewis did it seven times.
Okay.
Mike Singletary did it seven times. Lawrence Taylor did it eight times. And a guy named Joe Jingleheimer Schmidt, who played for the Lions back in the 50s and 60s, also did it seven times. There's only four linebackers in the history of the NFL.
Stats are for losers.
Only four that have been named first team All Pro more times than Bobby Wagner. How about that?
That about is some that? Elite freaking company.
Welcome
I'm looking
to
up Bobby
Canton, Ohio, baby.
Bobby Wagner will be, he will play his 31-year-old season. And we know the KJ Wright can play at 31. So
why not just go until 41?
41 yards!
And be done with it. But only four linebackers in the history of the NFL.
Stats are for losers.
Have been named first team All Pro more than Bobby Wagner. Pretty good.
This one I mentioned earlier on the week, but I want to repeat it because I think it just shows once again that paying running backs is stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Of the 16 running backs that made $5 million or more this season, only five are headed to the playoffs, and only two are currently their team's starting running back. The other ones are backups, Tariq Cohen, Mark Ingram, and Kareem Hunt. The other two are Alvin Kamara and Derrick Henry. So paying your running back has not paid off.
Bad idea.
Stats are for losers.
All right, we'll wrap it up with this. Number one defense in the NFL. You'll see it tomorrow in the Rams. Rams have the number one defense scoring-wise and yardage-wise in the NFL. Do you know what the last 2 years number one defense scoring-wise in the NFL have done in the playoffs? Last 2 years.
I'm going to guess they've lost.
They've lost their very first playoff game.
Stats are for losers.
The Patriots led the league in defense a year ago, lost to the Titans in the wild card round. Bears led the league in defense in 2018, lost in the wild card round. Minnesota, 2017, lost the divisional round game. The last time a team with the number one defense in the NFL went to the Super Bowl was 2016 when the Patriots won it. But the last 2 years, that team has lost their very first playoff game. Let's make it 3 for 3 tomorrow.
Stats are for losers.
With the Seahawks. We're going to break Chris Daniels. King 5 News. News on the Sonic front and potentially very good news if you're a Sonic fan.